The Gallatin County Democrats sponsored a debate for the Democratic Party candidates for Montana House District 61. The event was held via video teleconference on Thursday, April 9th, and KGVM recorded the debate then. Elizabeth Merrim was the moderator for the forum.
I would like to read to you the biographies of both Brian Close and Jim Hamilton. And then we will have opening statements from the candidates. Then we're going to go into a round of questions where each candidate will have several minutes to answer that question. And hopefully at the very end, we will be able to take questions from the audience. At the very end, we will have closing statements by both the candidates, and we will be done at 7 o'clock. So we promise not to go over. But this is a great opportunity for you to meet these candidates. First, Brian Close grew up in Illinois and graduated with honors from the University of Chicago. He received his master's degree in tax law from New York University and a master's degree in history from MSU, where he taught both history and tax law. Since coming to Bozeman in 1994, he has contributed to the community by chairing on or serving on multiple boards, such as the Gallivan, the Public Transit Study Commission, and the Bozeman Charter Commission. He is currently chairman of the Bozeman Parks Board. He is a recipient of the Montana Library Association Pat Williams Intellectual Freedom Award for opposing the Patriot Act. Brian lives in House District 61 with his librarian wife, Beth Boyson, and their aged black lab, Max. Welcome, Brian. Thank you for being with us. Jim Hamilton is in his second term serving in the Montana House of Representatives for House District 61, where he has served on several revenue, finance, and taxation committees and interim committees. Jim retired after 35 years as a financial advisor and has served for many years in community volunteer positions. He is currently a volunteer firefighter and has served in organizations such as the Rotary Club, the Gallatin Valley Land Trust, Montana Center for International Visitors, and Gallatin Center for the Performing Arts. The opportunity that launched his determination to serve in the legislature was being on the editorial board for the Bozeman Chronicle. Having lived in the nomadic life of a military family in childhood, Jim adopted Montana as his home in 1976. Since then, he has wanted to serve in ways that would preserve, protect, and enhance Montana's special values. Jim and his wife, Sue, are actively involved with their 4 grandchildren, and being outdoors is an important element in his lifestyle that includes hunting, hiking, biking, and occasionally chopping wood. So welcome, Jim, and I'm glad you could both join us for this forum. At this time, I would like to hand it over to Brian first, Jim second, and each will have an opening statement that will last 3 minutes. So I'm going to start my timer, and when you see these red flags, that means time's up. Okay. So here
Thank
we go.
Thank you very much.
Take it away.
I'm Brian Close. I'd like to thank the Central Committee for hosting this, Mr. Hamilton for participating, and all of you for joining us. I grew up in Illinois, attended college at University of Chicago, and law school at NYU. In 1994, I came to Bozeman for a teaching assistantship at MSU with $50 in my pocket and a 1987 Chevy Nova. My first 3 years, I worked 3 jobs while building my law practice. In 1996, I joined the Gallivan Board, and then led the effort for the Gallivan Levy and was Gallivan's chairman for 4 years. I was a member of Smoke Free Bozeman and a leader in getting Bozeman's secondhand smoke ordinance passed. In 2004, I was elected to the Bozeman Charter Commission and wrote the charter provision requiring all government officials to have ethics training. I am currently chairman of the Bozeman Parks Board. I am a Democrat. I've been a precinct captain, election judge, and Central Committee officer. I have stuffed envelopes, circulated petitions, phone banked, and worn out more than 1 pair of shoes canvassing for our candidates. Ours is a union household, and a house built as workforce housing for the hospital. I have received the endorsements of the Montana Federation of Public Employees, the AFL-CIO, and our standard bearer, Amanda Curtis. Should you choose me as your representative, I will abide by the following principles and goals. I deeply feel it is a representative's duty to consult with his constituents. You won't just hear from me every 2 years. I will have a constituent newsletter, regular office hours, and an advisory citizen council. As your representative, I will defend the retirement benefits of our government workers. I will oppose tax breaks to rich people and tax giveaways to rich companies and special legislation favoring one industry over the public. I believe in investing in people, universal preschool, manageable college tuition, and expanded vocational programs. I believe voting is a right, and we should extend it to all eligible citizens with automatic voter registration and all-mail ballots. Finally, as a tax attorney for 33 years, I know I will contribute to a fairer and more rational tax system, including property tax relief. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Jim, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Elizabeth, and thank you to the Gallatin Dems for putting on this event. It's certainly unique times and a unique situation, and I think this might be a really good way to deal with that. As Elizabeth mentioned, I'm in my second term as your House representative for District 61. And as a quick reminder for you, that really just goes from Rouse to the Park County line down to about Langer Campground and up to Sipes Canyon area. My professional background, I actually started my professional experience as a special education teacher. Did that for a number of years. So it was a great job. Had a great time with it. And seemed to be a natural fit for me as a teacher. I liked that. Then served as a financial advisor, as I mentioned, for the last 35 years, retiring about a year and a half ago. In the legislature, when I started serving in 2017, it seemed to be a good fit to be on the Revenue Committee, or Taxation Committee, as it's called, during the session. And that worked out pretty well. Then in the interim, between the sessions, I was on the Revenue Interim Committee. And one of the important factors there is to figure out the estimate of revenue for the upcoming session. In the 2019 session, I moved over to the Appropriations Committee. And that makes it quite unique in the sense that there is no one else on the Appropriations Committee who has had the experience of being in taxation and appropriations. And lastly, in my other current job for the legislature, I'm a liaison for the Montana Board of Investments. You know, the volunteer activities I've done, there's been a lot of them that have been very important to me and I've been proud of. Gallatin Valley Land Trust, I was there at the beginning. And that one's been one of my favorites. Currently, I am I'm still a member of the Sunrise Rotary Club, and one of our projects there has been the Fix-Up Festival that I was intricately involved in helping get off the ground, repairing homes for those who are low income. And finally, as Elizabeth said, I am a volunteer firefighter. So my priorities coming into this session were these. I wanted to work on a fair and equitable budget. I wanted to help create a more affordable and transparent healthcare system. And I want to fully support public education from preschool all the way through the university system. And like Brian, would like to see us figure out some ways for property tax relief. So with that, thanks for joining us. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you both. So we will alternate between the candidates on the questions. And the first question will go to Jim. You may have covered this, Jim, a lot of it, but what are your qualifications to serve as a representative in the Montana House, including your past public service work? So 2 minutes for each candidate.
Well, thank you. I think I go first on this one, Elizabeth.
Yes, you do.
I think that there are a couple of things. One, the time as a financial advisor and helping people plan for their retirements really created some skills in the business arena, as well as a pretty clear understanding of tax laws that affects individuals. That would be one thing. Secondly, I think the volunteer activities that I did largely ended up in a leadership role in each of them, the Rotary Club, the Gallatin Valley Land Trust, the MCIV board. So I got a great deal of experience in working with other people who might not always agree with you. And certainly that's something that we find in the legislature. I think what prepares me for the possibility of a third term is the fact that I've had these two previous terms. I must confess, I certainly had a perhaps more naive view of what the legislature did and how it worked before I got there. And certainly I've learned a lot of lessons about that while being there. The other thing that is quite unique from my situation is there's only very few people in the Democratic caucus at this point who have a business background. I think this last session I was one of five, and the previous time one of three. So I think that all of these things that I've mentioned really set me up to be useful in the legislature, mainly because the legislature is a process of building relationships and working together. And that's what all of these previous activities did.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jim. Brian, again, the same question. What are your qualifications to serve as a representative in the Montana House, including your past public service work?
Well, I actually love public policy. I've been working on public policy since I came here to Bozeman. I stumbled into it with Galvan and just have continued since. I've been on planning board, zoning board. I led the effort to start the public transit system here, and I just love it. So I have a degree from University of Chicago, and that means I have been trained for critical thinking, and I am able to take a problem, break it down as component parts, and apply my knowledge to it. A typical example of that for me was when I wrote Bozeman's dark sky ordinance. The planning board at that time wanted to have light up the entire city. But I went to Flagstaff, I looked at what their ordinance was, and I designed a dark sky ordinance from Bozeman that worked until the LEDs, and now it have to be revised. Another thing about why I'm qualified is that I have been willing to take risks. I have done things in this town that I was told could not be done. I got the Galvan levy passed. I got the secondhand smoke ordinance passed. The two charters before my charter failed. Ours passed with 60%. And finally, the reason why I won that intellectual freedom award is that I have been willing to take on controversy. I've been willing to do the right thing. So in my case, I was threatened at the city commission that if I spoke against the Patriot Act, I'd be fired. I went ahead and spoke because I believe in freedom. And so, I have a level of integrity, at least people tell me I do, that is more than appropriate for Helena. And I will act always act in the public interest.
Thank you so much. Your second question, and Brian, this time you go first and Jim second. Okay, what are your top priorities in the House and why are those important to House District 61? Again, Brian?
Well, as I've been calling 2,000 people because I can't leave my house, the issue that keeps on coming up is property taxes. So the legislature has given us no tools here in local government except for property taxes, and that's a real problem. So we need to have a plan to give particularly seniors extended property tax relief, more than they're getting right now, and the fight for a local option tax. That's number one. Number two, there was that awful situation where Lorraine Van Alstel, the former district court judge, district court clerk, stole $500,000 from her clients. The court system is not capable of discovering that. It wasn't discovered by the court system. So I'd like to introduce a bill for the training, licensing, and auditing of conservators, particularly those that handle more than one client. And then finally, I want to introduce legislation to make the mail ballot we're going to have be extended to all elections that almost passed three sessions ago, and to provide, as many states have, automatic voter registration so we can extend the franchise to all people. So those are the three things I would do. However, we may take the legislature, or we at least may take the House and hold the governorship. And in that case, I know the Democratic Party is formulating a more ambitious plan, particularly on social policy. And I will be supporting the new majority leader and our new speaker as much as possible. And so that's my approach to Helena. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Jim, your turn. What are your top priorities in the House, and why are those important to House District 61?
Thank you for the question, Elizabeth. Thanks for repeating it. I got distracted by the Q&A bubbles popping up at the bottom of the screen. I think that this is going to be a session about budget. I had these goals that I mentioned earlier about a fair and equitable tax system and a affordable and transparent healthcare system and property tax relief and public education support. I think those are important goals. I wouldn't change any of those goals, but I think the truth is that that's probably going to be secondary background to what happens in the budget. We are going to see, despite our great financial condition that we're in right now, I think we're going to see a very sizable decline in revenues. And if in fact that's true, we're going to have to figure out how to stretch that dollar much longer ways than we've had to in the past. 2017 was a bit of a struggle, but this will be much more sizable than that. You know, I spent a lot of time last session on local option tax. In fact, there was a group of us that formulated four different versions of local option tax for the revenue committee to look at, taxation committee. We were not successful on any of them. But under normal circumstances, that would be something that I'd really focus on. Very important for Bozeman to have another tool. We've got a lot of infrastructure needs with no way to pay for them. So I wish I could say that we were going to get to those other things, but I'm pretty convinced what we're going to do is be spending all of our time talking about budget.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, this question will be timed at 3 minutes. So I'm pretty sure you candidates, you know what it is, but let me read it for you. State employees are public servants and their wages are typically lower than private sector jobs. The public employee retirement system, PERS, is a benefit because it's a rare pension system that some employees choose over a 401k retirement benefit. Please explain your position on the management of PERS. And Jim, you go first on this. And again, it's 3 minutes.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth. I want to expand the question just slightly. It's not only PERS, but TERS. We actually have nine pension systems in the state. One of them is an unusual one in that it is for volunteer firefighters, but the other eight are sort of normal pensions. I took an interest in this about 2 years ago, longer than that, 3 years ago now, because of my background in the investment world. And one of the things that concerned me is that we have pension plans calculated in such a way that we need everything to go right for those to work over the long haul. And when I say go right, I mean things had to go as well as they've gone over the last 10 years in the market prior to what we're experiencing right now. And I thought that was very unlikely. And so a group of us legislators came together to start early looking at ways that we could strengthen and make the pensions more resilient. It was something that we thought we had lots of time to do because the pensions are in about average condition at this point. As it turns out, opponents of this effort of ours didn't want us to even look at the pensions. And so we ran into a little bit of turbulence on that. In the time we've had since things have kind of refocused on coronavirus and the concerns that people are going to have for that, I guess I would say the difference between the opponents and our group, or myself in particular, over the pensions are really centered around strategy and timing, not the intent. The intent, I think, of opponents and of myself is to make sure that the pension is healthy and that it lasts and payouts are paid appropriately for everybody who's entitled to one for now and the next 20 years and 30 years and 40 years. So it's more of a timing and strategy issue, I would say. You know, I'd like to just use a quick comparison here without getting people too bogged down in all the details. But if we look at Montana's pensions, we're in about average shape compared to other states. South Dakota, one of our neighbors, is about 95% funded. In other words, they're right at the top of the list. Our pension has a fairly, aggressive expectation of future returns. South Dakota doesn't. What I want to know is, why wouldn't we want to be a little bit more like them in this case? Not in all cases, but the making the pensions healthier and not having to be so strong in what we expect for future returns.
Thank you, Tim. Brian, would you like me to repeat the question?
Please do. Thank you.
Yes. Okay, it's state employees are public servants and their wages are typically lower than the private sector jobs. The public employee retirement system, PERS, is a benefit because it's a rare pension system that some employees choose over a 401k retirement benefit. Please explain your position on the management of PERS.
Okay, thank you. So, this is really about how to manage the system. So my opponent's effort is not the approach I would take. First, there are 600 union members and retirees in House District 61, and they have not been consulted on this. On this important matter, my opponent has failed his constituents. Second, Tom Wood's reform bill in 2013 fixed the pensions and was supported by our allies, the unions. Tom, the pension board, their finance director, and the board's consultants say the pension system is sound for the next 3 years. I direct you can go online and look at the interim legislative service committee meeting from January 15th, where this is all discussed. Third, instead of going to party leadership with his concerns, my opponent has allied himself with three of the worst anti-union and anti-pension Republicans, including Tom Burnett. Further, my opponent has been using skewed data from the Libertarian Anti-Union and Anti-Pension Reason Foundation, a group funded by an Enron billionaire and the Koch brothers. By law, pensions are up for review in 2023. My opponent admits there is no immediate crisis. He should have proceeded in regular order rather than his self-appointed committee. Finally, if I had taken this issue up, I would have handled it completely differently. First, I would have approached the Gallatin County Democratic delegation and party leadership with my concerns, backed with nonpartisan data, and then worked with the unions to develop a reform proposal, if it were needed. My first stop certainly would not have been Tom Burnett.
Thank you, Brian. Okay, next question, and Brian, you answer this first. The current legislature is 58 Republicans and 42 Democrats. If a similar composition exists, what steps would you take to build coalitions and pass legislation in a Republican-controlled legislature? Again, you have 2 minutes, Brian.
Sure. First, I would promote bills that would reach across the aisle and be difficult for them to oppose, such as protecting seniors from corrupt conservators, providing for a substitute for living wills when no one executes one, proceeding on some mental health issues, reaching out to some of the rural legislators on their mental health issues and seeing if we could get some discussion going there. So that would be first. You aim for things that there would be a consensus on. Then we have to address more complex issues. So for instance, I have a long-term plan for rationalizing the Byzantine tax system that we have here in Montana. And I would actually start with something they would probably be in favor of, which is eliminating the personal property tax. Illinois did that 30 years ago and just slightly raised the corporate tax and got rid of this entire arcane system of evaluating property. So there'll be issues like that that I perhaps will surprise them on and be able to work with them. And so, you know, if that is the composition, that would be my goal, to establish a positive relationship with them on the things we can agree on. And then finally, we should take a few chances. You can't have change until you advocate for change. And in that case, I would put forward a property tax bill, and I would try to pay for it by raising the highest tax rate and see what they're willing to do. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, Brian. Jim, same question. If the current legislature is 58 Republicans and 42 Democrats, if a similar composition exists, what steps would you take to build coalitions and pass legislation in a Republican-controlled legislature?
Thank you for the question, Elizabeth. Certainly, it's a situation I've lived in the last two sessions, so I've got some practice at it. And the very first step, which comes with a passage of time, is to build relationships with people. In my first session, I had a couple of very positive experiences with Republican legislators who cooperatively worked to help make naloxone available to a broader range of people to help those who had drug overdoses. In fact, a Republican and I both had the bill going, and we talked together and decided his bill might make more sense. And his response was very strong there. Second one was with the one of the leaders, the majority leader in the House, who had proposed a bill for senior protection, and I was able to, through our time together, make some suggestions to improve that bill. In this latest session, another good example of this would be working with the Republicans to increase fees on financial advisors, which has produced about $8 million worth of revenue for the state, and will do so on an annual basis. None of these things would have been possible without the time spent building relationships. So when you ask, what would I do? I would continue doing what I've done. For a large part of your first session, the other side of the aisle is very suspicious of anything you say because they don't know yet if they can trust you. And so this process of building relationships is the most important thing in the legislature.
Thank you so much. So that is the end of our formal questions here. Reset my timer. And so now we're going to the questions that are put on the chat box in the Q&A. And I'm going to, I think we covered some of this in a bit, but so let me go to a question from Patty Steinmuller. In what ways would you protect public ownership of public lands in Montana? Jim, you first on this one.
Thank you. And thanks, Patty, for emailing that question in. You know, we in the state legislature, we would love to have more impact on what happens in public lands, but it's very difficult at the state level because most public lands are federally owned public lands. There are places, however, in the state where we can focus on this, and that would be state parks, fishing access sites, the illegal and actually quite rude barricading or fencing of roads that could access some of the lands. That's actually a state issue, even though it's accessing lands that might be in checkerboard and or federal ownership. So those are the areas that we can have the biggest impact at the state level. Occasionally coming through the legislature, there's also resolutions. For example, we had one last time to take all of the federal lands out of the wilderness study designation. And as a state legislature, we can pass or not pass those kinds of resolutions. And obviously, we argue and fight against those things that that would harm public ownership of public lands. You know, the saying is public lands in public hands, and it needs to stay that way as best we can do it at the state level.
Thank you. Brian, in what ways would you protect public ownership of public lands?
Sure. Well, you know, one of the interesting things about the public lands is that they're a complex. So there's various levels of federal lands, and then there's various levels of state lands. And then there's all the efforts, like with GVLT and other environmental groups, that are attempting to create a network for the ecology to continue to function that we have intruded upon. And then several times in the legislature in the past, there's been attempts to like cap conservation easements, or then we have the sagebrush people who think that the federal lands are illegal and always trying to get legislation proposed, particularly our friend Kerry White down there, to take it all back and, you know, divvy it out and exploit it. So we have to be on guard. We have to be on guard against efforts like that, certainly while the Republicans control the House. So I would definitely defend against that. So then the question is, do we have adequate resources? Like, one of the things I came across was there's a license fee for using state public land that no one ever pays unless they get a hunting license. We need to find a way to fund that without having people search for one guy in the DNRC office. So we need to streamline funding of Fish, Wildlife, and Park to enable them to have responsible use by users of their property, and it'd be properly funded.
Thank you, Brian. The next question is from Pam Poom, and she asks, what is your view on allowing certain state employees running without political party affiliation? So that would be you first, Brian, and then Jim next.
Certain state employees running without political affiliation?
Without political party affiliation.
That's really difficult because of the Hatch Act. We get a lot of federal funds, you know, in the state under various federal spending programs. And the Hatch Act even goes down to nonprofits that receive federal funds. I just don't think it's possible for state employees to run. It's difficult for them to run for office and maintain their office. And for them to run a nonpartisan basis, I mean, I believe that people should be able to know where someone is coming from in terms of politics. And that's my answer.
Okay, thank you so much. What about you, Jim?
I am a little bit confused also by the question about state employees. I'm wondering if she is referring to, for example, what we had to vote on, I think it was last election, where the county officials could run without party affiliation. And, you know, that was certainly a mixed bag of arguments. I found myself sort of coming down on the side of saying that I think it would be okay for there to be races where there is no party affiliation announced under one condition, and that is that we really need to increase and sort of change the education of voters. Because I think the other side, the people who would say, no, we should always have party affiliations, and might have been well represented by David Parker of the university, said that would leave people sort of clueless about what people stood for. And he's probably right. Under the current system, I think for that to work, we would have to vastly improve the education, the ability for people to get information about what the candidates stand for. Because right now they make a decision based on party, which is, I don't think, all that useful.
Okay, thank you. There have been two questions, so let's get clarification on this about your opinions of a locals option sales tax, or a would you support enacting a local option sales tax at the state level and at the local, or at the local level, and actually address it for the city of Bozeman, because that's where you live, mm-hmm. and then the state. So your opinion.
Is that for me?
Yes, please, Brian.
Oh, sure. Thank you. Well, sales taxes are regressive. They are the most regressive form of tax. So I, this time, do not support a statewide sales tax. And in fact, there's a constitutional limit on how much we could even charge with a statewide sales tax. I'm not sure it would benefit us. However, that doesn't cover the resort tax or local option, which is sort of resort tax plus. And I would support a local option tax. We could design it so that it would have minimum impact on disadvantaged people by excluding pharmaceuticals and drugs and food, and then would be more likely to impact the millions of tourists that are passing through our community. To get it passed is going to require a compromise. Now, one of the efforts done three or four sessions ago was to basically pass some of Bozeman's sales tax money for our resort tax money to other localities, either in the county or in the state, and the same for other communities, so that there might be more support then if Manhattan, which might not be willing to administer a resort tax, might get a slice of Bozeman, we would still come out ahead. That there may be a necessary compromise on that, just to get it through. I think the more people we get up there, and I've organized testimony in Helena, if we get people up there screaming about the property tax, they might be more likely to listen on the local option tax. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Brian. Jim, your turn.
Well, in both of the sessions that I've been to Helena in 2017 and 2019, I have done local option tax bills. The first one I did myself, and that one never got out of tax committee. The second session, we decided to try a different approach because there is a bit of a Bozeman-Gallatin County bias, prejudice, you might say, against Bozeman-Gallatin County in the legislature. And so we ran those bills without Bozeman legislators taking a primary face in the bill. It still leaves us some challenges. As you can tell, because I worked on it so much, I do support it. Maybe clear about that. But it still leads to some challenges on how we would make it less regressive for our the residents of Bozeman. My opponent is correct that a sales tax is the most regressive tax out there. However, there are other states who have a very sizable credit to help offset that. We can't really do that at a local option level because we can't just give a credit to a Bozeman or a Gallatin County resident. So we're kind of in a very difficult situation at this point. We certainly would benefit in many, many ways from getting revenue from those who don't live here full time, who come to visit us. But we also would need to protect residents in terms of the regressive nature of it. The nice thing about local option tax is at least we can have the community discussion about how are we going to do this to protect the vulnerable folks.
Okay, thank you so much. That is really the summary of the questions that we have in the Q&As. And unless anyone else has a question that they would like to shoot up there right away, unfortunately, we had a technical difficulty and we don't have the advantage of being able to see the questions on Facebook. So I would invite you to just begin your closing statements, and let me set the timer for that. And I believe, Jim, you go first on these closing statements. And again, you have 3 minutes.
All right. Thank you, Elizabeth. I wanted to start with just talking a little bit about, I was trying to get my timer to work here, and now my timer doesn't work.
Turn it off. I got mine.
Okay. Well, I wanted to start with a little bit about the whole pension issue. This is a point of great controversy, and it's been in the news a lot. You know, a position has been taken by the opponents, and I would say the unions in particular, that we should not look at the pensions at all, that they were going to be fine. Right now, we have three pensions in the system that do not amortize, and that's one of the minimum requirements we in the legislature have to accept. By the questions that we've had tonight about this, either from the people in the Q&A or from you, Elizabeth, you've now asked more questions than the union did in inquiring what we were doing as a bipartisan group. So I'm a little disappointed in that, but it doesn't prevent me from continuing to work on this. We are going to need to, once we solve the basic needs of the state and get us out of this coronavirus, we're going to have to come back to this issue. The fact that we are anticipating a very optimistic future return is going to be a problem given what the market's done. But moving off that issue, I want to mention that this is going to be a historic session. We're going to have to stretch the dollar and the budget in ways that we've never had to get critical services in place. And there's a long list of those critical services. We're going to have to even look at how do we help businesses and how do we get the economy going again and building and rebuilding jobs so that people have money to spend and we can spend that money on services. We need experience, we need knowledge, and we need relationships now, not at the end of the next 2 years. And that can only come with time in the legislature. So why do I want to run again? I want to run again because I'm not done. And I'm not done because Bozeman and Gallatin County is punching below their weight at this point. We have an opportunity with the team we've got of legislators to come together and punch above our weight and do things like Butte does for the community. I have a unique set of skills. I've been a long-term small business person. I've worked in the budget. I've been on the revenue side. I've been on the appropriations side. Numbers come naturally to me. I think I'm a perfect fit for this situation, and I would like to ask for your vote and hope to get that vote and hope to get your help in this election.
Thank you, Tim. Brian, you get the last word.
Sure. Well, you can really judge who someone is and what they care about by what they propose. And in Mr. Hamilton's case, his record speaks for itself. He's proposed giving tax breaks to investors to invest in Montana. That's really trickle-down economics. He's proposed a tax-free sale of startups. He proposed a tax simplification plan that was modeled on the Trump 2017 Tax Act that would have wound up taxing workers' comp and unemployment insurance, you know, kicking people when they're down. He co-sponsored Senate Bill 239, which would have given millions of dollars to the cable companies. And the governor vetoed that, stating Senate Bill 239 creates a tax break for corporations to do things they're already doing in Montana. The state's limited budget does not have room for additional tax breaks like these that only benefit the largest corporations. He's pushed special interest bills, like making it easier to put a bar next to a school or a church, or making it easier for a distillery to sell 2 gallons a day per person out their back door. I mean, if I'm in the legislature, I am not going to pursue legislation like that. I'm going to pursue progressive tax legislation that benefits average people. That's what I'm going to do. So, yes, the coronavirus is a problem. And I know I am immune deficient. I am stuck in my house for a while. But I want to help Montana succeed. I've been a teacher, a lawyer, and a maintenance man. I know what it is to be unemployed. I will support seniors, veterans, public schools, our university and community college students, hardworking families, our Native American nations, and our members in uniform in Montana's constitutional guarantee to a clean and healthful environment. Not only am I endorsed by the unions, I'm endorsed by unions because I understand solidarity with the unions. And we need to show that to our union friends. This party needs the unions to succeed. Most importantly, I will stay in touch with my constituents. I ask for your vote in May to be your representative for House District 61. Thank you.
Thank you very much. At this time, I am going to try and share my screen with you and see if this works. There is no promise here. I do not have the great skills that our friend Allison does, but I'm going to try my best. This is the contact information for both of our wonderful candidates. Remember, those of you voting in House District 65, that you have decision power for this election. And and the winner of the primary will be the seated candidate in January. So please, if you have more questions for Brian or Jim, reach out to them directly at the information you see, hopefully posted to your screen. I want to thank everyone for coming tonight. I want to remind you to register and vote. Absentee ballots will be mailed beginning May 8th and must be returned to the county courthouse by June 2nd at 8 p.m. If it doesn't arrive by then, it isn't counted. Mail your ballot 1 week ahead to be certain it is delivered in time. Thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight. And let your friends know they, too, can visit the Gallatin Democrats' webpage and see this after the fact. And I believe perhaps watch it live streamed again on Facebook. So thank you so much for joining us. Good night.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Take care. Stay safe.
Thank you.